I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. There you go. The talk show about items of interest. Can't talk today. So that'll be bad. It's a talk show. To the geeks of the world and you, I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
All words you say order in right.
Yes, correctly. Hey, it's the Christmas episode, sort of, isn't it? Kind of. Well, look at you. You got the hat. You got a hat.
It's our solstice episode. We're actually recording this on the first day of winter. Happy winter. Winter has come.
Oh, man. It feels like it was already here, so now I'm bummed out that it'll continue to be coming because it's already cold. Don't need more of that. Thank you very much.
That just means we're on our way to spring.
Easy for you LA people to say. You know what? You know what'll happen to you is spring will come and there'll be no different for you. It'll just be spring, right?
It actually gets cold. Not what you would call cold, but it gets colder than it does in spring for a while. And then spring comes and we're all like ridiculously relieved. Like, oh, those 50s are over.
Yeah, I don't have to wear this thin jacket anymore. This hoodie of mine will never have to be worn.
I mean, Eileen really does celebrate when it actually gets cold. She's like, oh, I can wear my Uggs. Ooh, I can wear my winter coat that I bought. Never get a chance to wear.
Well, and you're no stranger to this. You grew up in, Illinois.
Grew up in Illinois. We had real winters there.
Yeah.
I know, so what it's like. And Champaign, Illinois, where I went to college, man, those are serious winds. Winter is what I would call it.
They don't call it the windy city that isn't Chicago for nothing.
That's right. I mean, a lot of Chicago people think of Champaign as a suburb of Chicago, even though it's like an hour and a half, three hours. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty far away.
I call it sparkling wine, Illinois.
No, it's spelled different. Oh. P-A-I-G-N, not P-A-G-N-E.
Like pigeon.
like the person's name. Just call it Urbana.
I call it Sham Pigeon, which is a fake pigeon.
That's the original University of Illinois mascot.
Oh, it's Sham Pigeon.
And then they said, you know what? Let's change it to the Fighting Illini. That'll be less controversial amongst the pigeon activists.
He'd come out and rip his pigeon hat off and go, I was a quail the whole time.
I was a quail.
I was trying to think of another dumb bird that barely flies. And that was the only one.
Ha ha ha.
I gotcha.
I was a penguin.
Well, we are both penguin and we are here at your service, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about cool things this week as we jump into the Christmas holiday season, and it begins with this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, time for us to dig into the news, and Tom will bring it to you.
I will. Scientists at MIT have taken peptides, glad holiday peptidings to you, from a South American wasp's venom. Not so happy holiday pep tidings, to create a medicine that kills bacteria but not human cells. In tests on mice, they were able to eliminate Pseudomonas aeruginosa bacteria, which are actually antibiotic resistant. So if you've been worried about superbugs and antibiotic resistance growing, this could be a way out. The peptide disrupts bacterial cell membranes, and they basically just tried it out until they found the balance where it killed the bacteria but not the human cells.
Didn't we have I swear it was on this show, a recent conversation about, was it llama blood or something? What was the other thing? But we're finding, point is, we're finding these new things inside of creatures that were already here the whole time. They were here the whole time. And now we're finding new uses for this stuff. And it's kind of great.
I mean, when antibiotics just worked, why bother looking, right? But now that we got to the point where all the antibacterial toys in the world have created super bacteria,
right?
It's time to look for something besides antibiotics.
Yeah, we got to go to the next level. And I'll tell you what, I can think of no better use for American wasps, South American wasps rather, than this, because otherwise those are terrible and terrifying. I know they're part of an ecosystem. That's great. But you stay on one side of the road, I'll stay over here, Mr. Wasp.
You stay on your side of the ecosystem, venomous wasp.
Right.
That's fine.
Right. I'm not interested in wasps. Those Japanese, you know the Japanese ones are like the size of a Twinkie? No interest in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't go near it.
I hated wasps as a kid.
Yeah.
One of the favorite stories my sister likes to tell is that we were kids. She wanted to leave the sandbox. We had a literal sandbox out in the backyard that we would play in.
Yep.
She wanted to go inside and leave the sandbox. And I was like, I want to stay in the sandbox and keep playing. You go ahead. And she didn't want me to stay for whatever reason that neither one of us can remember. So she said, you know, that's fine. Wasps like sand, and then walked away. And I was like, ah, I don't want to stay in sandbox.
Yeah, I've only had three stinging occasions in my life, and all three of them were wasp related. So regular bees, no problem with bees. They're
fine. I feel like I've only had two stinging occasions. Yeah. I'm probably wrong. I've probably been stung other times, but the two memorable ones were we were on our way to Kentucky Lake on a summer vacation. And something flew in the car and flew in my mouth and stung me on the tongue.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh,
that's awful, dude.
Never did know what it was. I mean, it was probably a bee, but
That's terrible. How old were you then?
Oh, I don't know. I was probably 8 or 9, I think.
That's terrible, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's the worst story I've heard in a while. I can't imagine getting a bee.
That was
in
one,
my mouth.
And the other was backstage at his tour. I met Sting.
Oh, nice. He doesn't hurt as bad as everyone says.
No, it didn't hurt at all.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's just a mild nibble.
That was my other Sting encounter, though.
Did you really meet Sting?
I did. Really? Yeah, I have a picture.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Did he talk to you about tantric love? Or what was the conversation like?
You know, I was with my friend Mark Maurer. Mm. Mark was a huge fan, and especially of The Police. And this was Sting's, I'm trying to remember the name of the album, but it was the one that was very jazzy. It had Russians on it, Englishman in New York.
Right, right.
And so my friend did all the talking, and Mark said, I remember a Sting before jazz. And Sting said, I don't.
That was it.
That's it. Shake hand, take a picture, see you next person.
Oh, that's fantastic. They're so relatable, these megastars. Fantastic.
And they're just like us.
Just like us. All right. Well, there you have it. The moral of this story is don't count out your wasps until we figured out if they can cure human disease.
Yeah. That's and keep your mouth closed if you're 8 or 9 years old with the window open on the way to Kentucky Lake.
No kidding.
It's official, Scott. Microsoft will rebuild the Edge browser to run on the Chromium platform using the Blink and V8 JavaScript engines. Chromium is, of course, run by Google as an open source foundation and also provides the foundation for the Chrome browser. Microsoft Vice President for Windows Joe Belfiore cited compatibility and battery life as two of the reasons. Current Windows 10 Edge installations will just get the new platform automatically in an update at some point. You won't have to do anything. While Edge will also afterwards become available for Windows 7, Windows 8, and Mac OS. Beta builds will begin early next year, and Microsoft's working with Google to bring a native ARM64 version of Google Chrome to Windows 10 on ARM. And side note, Mozilla's working on bringing a native version of Firefox to Windows 10 on ARM. And Firefox sort of becomes the only major non-Chromium browser out there. It's got 9% market share. If you pile in Opera and Edge and Chrome together, they've got about 80%. Safari's got a couple of percent out there, but it's even WebKit, which is what, you know, is sort of a derivative, a contributor into the Chromium system in a way. So it's a Google world on the browser now.
Yeah. Safari uses WebKit, right? Or is it Chromium?
Safari uses WebKit.
Yeah.
WebKit was forked by Google to create Blink.
Yeah.
So it's I was explaining it to Allison Sheridan the other day. I was like, even though WebKit doesn't influence Blink anymore because Blink is a fork, what Blink does sort of reverse influences WebKit, the way the Anglican Church sort of imitates the Catholic Church.
That's awesome.
Like the Anglican Church isn't part of the Catholic Church, but when the Catholic Church changed things historically, a lot of times the Anglicans go, you know what? We're going to do that too.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. It was born out of rebellion, but now it's just kind of, we'll mirror what you're doing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I get that. I like that analogy a lot. All right. Now it's easy to look at this news and go, this is a concession on Microsoft's part. They're caving in. They're going to the other side with a chief competitor, blah, blah, blah. I don't see it that way. I see this as a good thing, a very cooperative move. Now, you could argue, I think the argument's a fair argument to say the Chromium project, as controlled by Google, is a little too much power over a dominant force to be reckoned with when it comes to browsers and browser tech under the hood. And so this is, maybe one more thing, or, they're a little overweighted that way. But I see it as a good thing because this is Microsoft basically saying, well, let's give the users a better experience. Let's give them better battery life. Let's work with Google on this for the ARM thing. Like, let's bury the hatchet a little bit and dig even deeper into Satya Nadella's attempt to say Microsoft everywhere. Quit worrying about owning the platform. Like, let's just make it so that our name, our brand, and our quality products can be pushed elsewhere. I think that's good.
I think it's unfair to call this a failure on Mozilla's part, but the idea was Gecko would be this engine. Mm-hmm. And when Opera went Chromium and Blink instead of going Gecko, writing started to be on the wall. Opera is very purist when it comes to its open standards, and it went Chromium. I would have preferred a universe where the Mozilla Foundation is the one predominantly providing the engines, whether Firefox is predominant or not. And wouldn't it be great if Edge, Opera, Firefox, you know, and a bunch were on Gecko to the point that Google eventually had to cave in and join that foundation? That's not what is happening. So I'm a little uncomfortable with Google owning the foundation that is providing the engine for the majority of browsers out there, but at least it's not one browser like it was with IE for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Microsoft may end up being the alien baby inside the Chromium foundation that just bursts out and takes over.
Yeah, it could be interesting. I mean, I'm suddenly more interested in Edge, and also hearing a macOS version is coming. I'd like to experiment with my browsers on different platforms, so that's all very exciting. Do you think it holds any water at all? And Chatroom brought it up, but the sneaky little rumors floating around that Microsoft is forced to do this because Edge just can't get the performance out of YouTube, the world's leading video distribution platform, that it needs to. So it's moving to Chromium so that they can have a quote unquote Edge.
It's not a rumor. It's an allegation. It's important to think if you're really going to think about these things seriously, it's important to know the difference. A rumor is something someone you don't know said to someone else and it gets passed around. Yeah. This is an allegation. We know who's saying it. It's a former intern who is saying, hey, you know what? When I was working at Microsoft, people were pretty frustrated with the fact that they couldn't get Edge HTML, which was the engine behind Edge, to work with Google Sites. And we all kind of felt like maybe Google was doing this on purpose. Particularly, there was a problem with YouTube, both with Firefox and with Edge, where an empty div tag was seemingly causing problems with video acceleration. Now, that has since been fixed. Google said it was a bug and that they fixed it, and they never meant it to intentionally undermine. So it's probably one of those situations where, you know, they just didn't bother to care. that something was slowing down, not that they actively did it on purpose. I do think, though, that it is valid to consider that Edge HTML became not worth it to push as its own when you had so many other developers working on Chromium-based browsers out there.
Right.
Well, so, you know, I don't think that's a rumor. I think that's a possible reasonable reaction. And the allegation about Google like intentionally trying to undermine other browsers is impossible to prove. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. Yeah. But either way, we end up with this situation.
Yeah. And the hope to finish this off, I'd say the one hope I have is Edge will no longer, including for me, possibly no longer be. Well, who knows what average users even know about this or think about this, but they will no longer just be a software tool to launch the Chrome website to then install Chrome, which is how a lot of people do it. They get a new load, they install Windows, they get a new PC. The only browser on the system is Edge. You run Edge, you go to Chrome.com, you get Chrome, and then you never use Edge again. Maybe they'll get a chance to not be that anymore. I mean, they certainly had their time in the sun with IE back in the day.
I mean, it will certainly save them some developer money.
Yeah.
Not having to test a separate browser. That's, and the downside is there is less incentive for developers to test on Firefox now because it's right. We got 80%. Why bother?
Yeah, that's usually plenty. And then it's more on Firefox to actually sort of
We used to run into this, I remember, at ZDTV.com. I would take complaints about rendering in macOS to the development team, and they'd be like, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
and at that point, this was, back in the late 90s, the Mac market share was so low, they were like, eh, but you know, we don't really want to spend time.
It wasn't a big deal to them,
that
sure.
number of people.
Sure.
And it's sad but true, but that happens in business quite a bit.
Yep. I will say that I'm very happy with Safari lately, and I don't know why. Just really like it. It's been super solid since Mojave, and I don't know why.
I usually use them all. I love Opera sometimes. Yeah. I end up using Chrome a lot because of the Google integration and things with Gmail. Mm-hmm. But I also use Firefox and I use Edge, and yeah.
You do not discriminate in the browser universe.
I use Vivaldi, Scott.
Oh my gosh, you got Mosaic installed still. Tom's still got Netscape running right now.
You mean Sea Monkey?
I mean Sea Monkey. Wow. And he's got his homepage is dogpile.com. Lycos, a little dog icon is up there. Ah, those are the days. Yeah. Anyway, it's exciting.
Scott, the Large Hadron Collider is shutting down.
No.
For 2 years of upgrades.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's going to take them 2 years to do all the upgrades. The injectors will be able to accommodate stronger particle beams after this. Collision measuring detectors will see upgrades. Also, more work will move the LHC to eventually become the High Luminosity Large Hadron Collider, or HLLHC, in 2025. Yeah, the short version of all this is they'll be able to gather more data and hopefully discover more things, because other than the Higgs boson, they haven't discovered the things that they were hoping to discover that would solve some of the major questions in physics.
Yeah, and we haven't all been sucked into a big black hole and killed yet either. So, you know, all those...
Not once.
No, all those fears...
That we know of.
That we know of, right. This could be a... Well, we could be in a simulation anyway, thanks Elon
We could be
Musk.
In a simulation. This could be a time loop that always ends in the black hole and then restarts.
It's I'm not going to name names, but I have a member of my extended family, let's say, who is convinced that the end of mankind is tied to the Large Hadron Collider in some way. And that at some point, and we're not going to know when it happens because it's going to happen so quick, we're just out of here. But he is sure that that's going to do it. We're going to rip a tear into the time-space continuum, and that's it. No more. Listen, nothing. Yeah.
Scott.
Yeah.
We don't have, you know, weird political events or strange weather phenomena or any of the signs you would normally see if there were a problem with the fundamental nature of reality.
Right. Right. I saw The Matrix. They had a really prescient point in there. It was like, we have to make the world have disease and death and unexplained this, or a guy loses his job there, or people don't believe they're in a real place.
If the nature of reality had been affected by the Large Hadron Collider, we would see unlikely world leaders, we would see rampant fires and hurricanes, you know, and strange things like that.
Yeah, really weird, like, couldn't have written it kind of stuff happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't think anything's happened. It's been fine. Go ahead and do your upgrades. I'm sure it won't cause any further issues. It's fine.
Oh my gosh, we have to stop them now. finally, Netflix confirmed to the LA Times it is testing an instant replay feature. I'm curious what you think of this. A watch that scene again option will pop up after significant scenes. Netflix said it's just looking to learn. It may or may not roll it out more broadly. Although most of its test participants have found the pop-up distracting, it would like to figure out how to give you this feature without bugging you. And so that's what the aim of the test is. Which is like, we know popping something up and saying, hey, would you like to see that fight scene again is annoying.
Yeah.
But they're trying out things because they know it would be cool if you could seamlessly just click a button, you know, after that hallway fight in Daredevil, say like, oh my gosh, I want to watch that again. Or after the Red Wedding, saying like, what just happened? I need to watch that again. It would be cool if they can figure it out, maybe with some machine learning, where those points are, so that you could always just press the button and it would take you right back to the beginning of that scene.
Yeah, and I know, like right now, you have to manually scan if you want to do something like this, and you have to, you know, get lucky with where you stop the cursor. If you're on a TV, some remotes are better than others, but you're going to maybe get there, sort of. But I like the idea of this. I agree 100% that a button popping up after the scene saying, do you want to watch that scene again, is horrifically distracting and should not be the implementation, but I already know what they need to do. I have this solved. Why don't I work for freaking Netflix? Why does
Netflix hire Scott?
Why doesn't Reed Hastings call me?
First?
Well, here's my idea, and then Reed Hastings can call me after that.
Okay.
So it's easy. You just make it so at the end of that scene, you're like, oh my gosh, that scene was great. Just touching the remote, that you would normally do to get like, oh, here's the timeline. And usually there's a little square showing where the video is. Like, this is just standard feature on a TV or on a browser or something. If you're watching it on a computer, when you mouse over into the area of the video, you get the play bar and the little scrubber spot and the thing. That stuff comes up now already. Just have the button come up when those come up. So it's like, ooh, what was that? Rub up on the thing and bam. I keep thinking of the Apple remote, which sucks. But anyway, I just keep thinking of it. But imagine that, where it pops up and it just says, watch the scene again. Hit okay. Like, just go.
I think the problem is not all interfaces work the way, like with the touching of the touchy bar.
Mm.
Like with the Roku, I have to press pause to see the timeline or just press rewind.
That'd be okay though. Pause.
But it might still work if I press pause and then the button comes up and it's like, oh, click on this if you just want to watch that scene again.
Yeah. You want to watch.
It's not as seamless as watch that scene again, press a button.
Right. If you want to see Jeff Lebowski have Donnie's ashes blown all over him again in The Big Lebowski, then
who wouldn't?
Right when that's over with and John Goodman's trying to brush him off and they have their little hug, just hit pause or whatever the mechanism on any device is, and right there's a little watch the scene again. And
I should be careful here. Jester Woot in the chat room said, I have never actually wanted to watch a scene again. Okay.
That seems really.
then this is not for you. There are also people who've never used Netflix. This is also not for them.
All right. Can I add it? Okay. I'm going to add one more thing that I want.
I don't like television. Not this feature. Not for you.
I have never seen an episode of a thing. Okay. Don't watch that show.
I apologize.
It's all right, Jester, but you understand where he's coming from. Okay. So here's the dealio. If you can't figure that out, here's the feature I do want. Do you remember pop-up video on VH1 in the 80s and 90s? Remember that weird thing where it'd be like they'd show a music video?
Oh, yeah, right. No, and that you knew what you were getting into. You just, you know.
Yeah, you just did
like, it. Oh, pop-up videos. All right, I'm going to be bugged with pop-ups. Some people hated that.
I want to be able to turn that on or off like I would closed captioning, because I love it if I see, let's say I watch Old Country for No Men or No Country for Old Men. Old Country for No Men. And I watched that all the way through and I loved it. And I'm like, man, that was great. I wish they had commentary on Netflix. They don't. So maybe that's the answer. But if they're never going to do that, instead, I want to rewatch it with pop-up video. And it's the stuff that just go bloop. In this scene, Josh Brolin actually broke his leg. You didn't know that because he hardly limped on it, but they filmed it anyway. Like,
I am also like Jester Woot. I never rewatch a scene, but I know people who do.
Right.
On the first run through.
Right.
Right. So it's for those people who are like, it's the first time I'm watching it and I've decided I just have to see it again. I'm not going to wait to watch it again later.
Right.
I want to see it again right now.
Mm-hmm. My wife's done this. This has literally happened when we're sitting watching, I don't know, something dumb. We're watching Friends reruns and I'll be drawing on my iPad or doing something else. And she'll say, oh my gosh, you missed this. And I go, what? And she goes, hang on a second. And then we got to fumble with the remote she'll and try to figure back. It out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine she just go boop. And there it was. Like, there's value to this for sure, but having it pop up in view on any standard viewing is a mistake. They should not do that.
If you are like me and saying, well, I don't do that, that's okay. There are people who do, and they want this, and it's cool.
Yep.
Don't judge them.
Yep. Totally. By the way, that pop-up trivia thing, I'll bet you money that that's possible now with a little implementation work. For Prime mostly, because Prime already has access to all that IMDb data, all that.
Well, they have
data.
I can't remember what it's called, but it works best on the desktop. Although I think it also works on Fire TV X-ray.
Yeah.
And the tablets on the Fire tablets, where you can just tap on something and it'll show you the names of all the actors and little tidbits of information. It's essentially what you're talking about, but it's only activated when you initiate it.
Yeah. And I think since they've already got that data there, like, give us some of that. If I turn it on and choose to have a pop up and go, bloop, Mark Hamill did this movie before he got in his car wreck during Corvette Summer. Bloop, have a disability. Like, I would be so into that. And you could just turn it on and off. And honestly, this thing with the rewatch the previous scene, which is the whole point we're talking about this. You could also have that as like a closed captioning thing. If you don't mind having the button down there when it happens, turn it on. If you don't want it, turn it off.
Yeah, that's true. But give people the option. And you know, in this day and age, it's our tendency to just want to get outraged. So everybody assumes that Netflix is going to force this on everybody and put it on the screen all the time. Netflix is very is out there going, no, that's not what we want to do, but we have to try this out to see how it works best.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a chance to try before you condemn us.
Yes, please do. And also give us a chance to tell you a little something extra in today's segment before we give our
thanks. Yes. So this is our last Current Geek of 2018. Mm-hmm. We're about to celebrate 5 years of this version of Current Geek, mm-hmm. although there were previous incarnations of Current Geek.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a good time for us to look back on 2018, not just about Current Geek of the show, but just in general, Scott. Mm-hmm. What are you going to remember most about 2018?
Oh, gosh.
Let's get personal. Like, don't even feel like it has to be a video game, although it might be.
It might be, sure.
Like, when you think, like, 2018, what are the first things that pop up into your head? Like, these were the big things that I'll remember about this year.
For me, it was not the validation, but the feeling that my love of Westerns was being validated.
Okay, this is a good one. I like this.
And so, and you know what? We're going to have some theme music for this. It's a little Christmassy here. All right, let's turn that down. For me, it was the show that showed up on Netflix called Godless. It was, I guess you call it a miniseries because there's no other seasons planned. It was planned as a 10 or 12 episode run, and that was it. And I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I watched it twice all the way through. I can't say enough about it. And then later in the year, again, Netflix comes out with The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, a Coen Brothers film. More like set of films, an anthology series. And it was awesome. I love that as well. And I don't know why these really stick out for me, but they absolutely do. They stick out as a reminder that that genre, which I love so much, can not only exist but thrive in this ecosystem we're in now where unique artistic visions don't have to jump all the same hoops they used to have to jump to get to theaters or to get to network television. They can take detours and go other ways, and in some ways they can be, you know, AAA quality but land in your lap the night they come out on Netflix or on Amazon or wherever they're showing up. And I love that about the time we live in. That being said, I think that's an important thing to say. I'm going to cheat a little and say I think the most surprising thing just happened last week, which was I cannot believe Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was even possible, let alone as good as it was. Hmm. One of the most unique things I've ever seen ever in my life in that movie. And I hope it sets a precedent for future stuff and maintains good storytelling, because I think that's what it all hangs on. But I haven't seen it yet. You need to see it, Tom.
And everyone tells me that. And Eileen and I both are like, is it gonna hold up with all the high expectations? I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder, because I wondered the same thing going in. I thought, am I going to come out of this going, oh, that's not quite how everyone sold it to me or something. But I ended up coming out well past what my expectations were already high. I came out higher. Now, because that's not going to help you, because what I'm doing is saying to you, high expectations weren't high enough. Now they're even higher. I've raised the bar again. That may be too much.
Right. Well, this is how science is done, right? Right. You were the first experiment. Like, all right, let's ratchet it up a little. See what happens with merit.
Yeah. It was unlike anything I've seen in movies or television or any kind of media for a very long time. And the fact that it's straight up just Spider-Man. Oh, I can't even explain why it was so amazing. So not since Fury Road have I felt this strongly about a film. Yeah. But it was that kind of year
I
for
can't
me.
Wait. I can't wait to see this kid's cartoon.
Yeah. you're my mother-in-law all of a sudden. I'm enjoying this. It's like I'm with family.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me your big hit of the 2018. What did you like the most?
You know, I hadn't meant to include it, but I will include Roma from Netflix as fitting into that category of being able to watch really high quality movie entertainment at home almost immediately. There was a window where it was only in theaters, but Roma, Alfonso Cuarón, without a doubt, the best movie I saw all year, and one of the best movies I think I may have ever seen.
Wow.
Really good.
That's high praise, man.
I when I think about what I remember about 2018, the first thing that comes to mind is moving. We moved into a new house, and that was a big deal, you know, and settling into this house and reconstituting my studio, and finding the relaxation of being in a new location that's quieter. My old neighborhood, I talk about it a little bit here and there, but it was loud. People were always tearing down houses and building new ones within, you know, a block of me. It's so much nicer.
No, that's a small, simple thing, but I like the sound of that too.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that stood out to me was in previous moves, and I've moved a lot. I've moved like 24 times since I was 18 years old. Setting up internet was always a nail biter, right? It was like you never knew when they would show up and would they really know what they were doing and would the service actually work or would they have to come back? I set up two accounts here, one with SonicNet, which required an AT&T person to show up, and one with Spectrum, which is Charter.
Yeah.
Both were flawless. Wow. Both of the techs showed up right on time, knew exactly what they were doing, didn't screw up anything, and gave me exactly what I ordered. And both connections work fine, work as promised.
Wow. Do you worry there's another shoe going to drop or something? Because that's insane.
I was for a few months, you know, and knock on wood, maybe I'm cursing it now. But but I'm less talking about the ongoing service, but more about that day, both installations. And I had them both installed on the same day. Mm-hmm. And I was worried like, oh, is one of them going to be here all day? And then the other one shows up and they get new. No, they were both like lickety split. Got it up, got it running. Got out of my hair.
Yeah. I think it was a good year for internet for me as well, despite a couple of outages I had. I had to finally make this decision, and it's in their favor, but I upped my monthly another $50 to get unlimited no cap stuff with my deal I have going with Comcast. And I have to say, since that day, and you could have conspiracies about this maybe, but since that day, it has been streams have been flawless. Like when it's up, no issues ever. But I was kind of having a few here and there back in the before.
Sometimes
time.
All you got to do is throw money at the problem.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't want to give them too much credit because I just feel like
right.
You know, it was a little bit weird. But that's good. I'm happy to hear that went well. Did you?
The
have,
other thing I'll remember most about 2018 is my trip to Australia for my nephew's wedding, which of course that was memorable just in and of itself. My nephew getting married, huge. But also just, you know, visiting Australia with more time than the last time I was there and doing two meetups, one in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and meeting great people and eating great food, drinking great beer, and just having a grand old time. I will always remember that.
That's awesome. Yeah, this seemed like you had a good trip. Okay, so I do have one more then. It was having the opportunity to stand in front of 20,000 or whatever people it was at BlizzCon and run a panel.
Be remiss if you didn't mention that. Like, that's got to be like a lifetime memory.
It was up there. I think what I liked about it most now, all in retrospect, we had a lot of cool things happen with it. But I think my favorite thing is that I went in thinking I was supposed to be nervous about it. Got up there and wasn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, oh, that's because you're good at this, or you've done this for so long, or this is your place, this is your world, or whatever. And all of that may be true, but I think part of it was when I got up there and saw this sea of faces. When it's 200, 300, 400, those are all potentially individuals I will now meet and hang out with and talk to. That makes me more nervous. 20,000 people or whatever it was is no longer people. It's just...
just overwhelmed your senses.
Yeah, it's like that old line in The Incredibles where he says, if everyone has superpowers, nobody's super. And it's like that. If there's enough people, there's really no people. It was a very odd experience for me, but I loved it on all levels, and I thought it was a great time. And I have to put that one up there. It reminded me of it when you were talking glowingly.
Yeah, fantastic, man.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's our wrap up of our favorite things this year. Oh, that's perfect timing.
Happy holidays.
Well, the music ended right then. I couldn't have planned that. That was fantastic. All right. Where are we now? Oh, we should thank our subredditors, people who sent these articles in today and helped us have some content. Who should we give thanks to today?
Yeah, thanks to everybody who's been submitting and voting all year. Joe Better, particularly on this episode, Ripley Ludacris, Yogo Craig, Jeff Rose, all submitted stories we used and talked about on today's show. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
CurrentGeek.reddit.com. Keep those submissions coming over the break because they still get looked at when we do our first of these kinds of shows in the new year.
That's right. And another reminder that the way we handle the show is we have sponsors. The sponsors turn out to be you. You at home. Yeah, that's right. Over at patreon.com/currentgeek. You're literally our bosses in this case, and we love that you are. For all those who support the show, huge, huge thanks. If you haven't considered it, think about doing that in 2019. It's a great way to show your love for the content the creators make that you like, and maybe we're one of those. Patreon.com/currentgeek is the place to go, and we would love it if you did. Okay. Time for this. Wait, time for this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, I wrote this one down today for forecasts where we predict the future in various ways. This is one that I actually think is not that crazy, and I very much look forward to it. We may already be there in a very rudimentary way, but I think it's going to get better and better. And that is real-time room or space manipulation. I think it's coming, and I'll try to explain what I mean. We just put some flooring in and painted some walls and did some floorboards. Not floorboards. What are they called? The trim down there. They're called
the baseboards.
Baseboards. Thank you. We just did a bunch of that stuff. And I remarked a number of times during the process when it was all sort of torn up and we were trying to figure out what goes where. I said to myself and Kim, I'm like, I can't picture any of this done. I don't know if any of the colors we've picked are good. She seems confident, but I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I'm bad. You know, for a guy that draws and makes stuff up in his head all the time, you'd think I could do it, but I can't practically see what a room's supposed to look like. And it occurred to me, and I meant to talk about this on an earlier episode, so I'm glad we're finally getting to it, but we're going to get to a place where, and we're already at a place where we can take our phones and kind of fake some of this with AR and then say, oh, here's a couch over here and some paint here.
Yeah.
And then there's 3D stuff on desktops and there's, you know, visualization tools certainly exist. You could put on a VR headset. In theory, the AR, the better AR stuff that's coming our way will even be better at doing this. But I think it's going to end up being coming from the other direction. And we'll just have to perceive it like we would with our own real raw eyes. And that will be the ability to bend light or create space changes so that you can see them in real time. So you'll walk into a room. How this will be accomplished, I don't know. I don't have a good explanation, but... You walk into a room.
Hold on. Yeah. Let me just ask you though. When you say bend light, so you're not talking about the floor actually changes.
No.
You're talking about changing the appearance so it looks like it changed.
Exactly. So if you're looking at a wall.
It's just augmented reality. Just augmented reality that's a lot better than what we have now.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm saying. And it may be that we still have to wear something or have some layer between us and it, or it's the it that's doing it. I love the idea. Well, you know what? Let's take it one step further. I see a wall. It's blue. And I go, you know, I'd really like to see what that would look like in red. Forget about that part. I don't want to actually paint it. I just want smart walls that change according to what I wanted to do. So
see, now that's what I was wondering if you're getting to also. Like, what if the flooring could just change itself?
Right.
That's, you know, you load up a 3D printer with some spools. And it just feeds a new floor out onto your, and suddenly you've got hardwood where you had tile before.
That'd be amazing. Like, I love all of that. And I'd love the idea of being able to preview it in a real time way. I like the wall's even better where it's not even a physical change. It's just that wall is now red. It's literally instantaneous. I tell my voice assistant to change it.
Well, know? when we talk about 8K, a lot of people go, what good is that? I can't see the difference, but 8K definitely allows you to do things like turn your wall into a view of the outside.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't look like it's a screen.
It's imperceptible.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the content and the quality at which it was captured, obviously, but you could create imperceptible outdoor view of something. It reminds me of the book Wool, the short story Wool and its subsequent sequels. Mm-hmm. You've talked to Hugh before on Sword and Laser. Anyway, that guy's great. But I remember they always described they had a window built into that thing, but it wasn't a window. It was a screen the whole time, but nobody knew the difference. Like, I've always been fascinated by that kind of trickery. And 8K has a place to play because our eyes can't really perceive much past it. So really anything there or further is just going to look as real as possible. So
starts to feel like the thing I'll resist because I'm old and inflexible, which is like, come on, nobody has televisions anymore. You just replace your wall, grandpa. And then you can have your television on there. You can have your movie.
Yeah. No, that's a good old man stance. I think I support it. I support your old man stance.
I like a television. I need a device.
Yeah. Well, anyway, if my future comes true, it would do a lot for my decor. Like, this whole wall with art behind me, I could change that art out anytime I want just with a snap of a finger. It's like, I don't want a Wookiee in there anymore because Disney's after me. Okay, poof, it's something else now. I don't know why that appeals to me so much, but it does. Anyway, we'll see if my future thing comes true. But now we have this. We talked about the best thing of the year. Let's talk about the best thing of all time this week. And for me, it's putting a smart socket, power socket, on my Christmas tree.
Oh, I'm very close to this. I don't actually have a smart socket, but I have a wireless old socket.
Yeah.
So I can't do it from my phone or voice, but I can, sitting at the couch, turn the tree on and off. Is that one of the big things here?
Yeah. So what you're looking for is that kind of remote ease of use thing, mm-hmm. but there's also an added layer, which is you can create timers. So you can just have it turn on at, I don't know, whenever it starts to get dark, and it stays on until 1 a.m. and you just do it through the season and you're done. These are the same ones I use in here. Like right now I can go, I'll mute this part. Turn off right. Okay, so as you can see, it's got much darker in here. Yeah. So it's the same same light that I use there.
Do you say turn off Christmas?
No, but you know what I could? Like, I should change the name. Right now I just have
begin
it as tree.
Christmas.
I have tree. I have turn on tree, turn off tree is what I have right now. But that's great.
Cancel Christmas.
Cancel Christmas.
When the lights go off.
You're a mean one. Anyway, so I use
I'm sorry, kids. Christmas is canceled.
It's canceled. I use Smart Life is the app I use, and it's not so much an app as it is a acceptor of standards. Like, it's the whatever that standard is that these devices are using. I have a lot of stuff that uses that, some outdoor stuff or whatever. All I did was add this cheap, like, $12 socket to the Christmas tree socket. No more reaching around the tree, yanking it out of the wall, plugging it back in the next day. I freaking hate it.
No way to live.
No, this is the future. This is now. And I did it and I'm thrilled about it. And I recommend it highly for anyone who's sick of dealing with their freaking cord on their tree, because it sucks and it's stupid. All right.
Tom, yeah.
Tom, what's your best thing this week of all time?
My best thing of all time this week is the Instant Pot. I know I'm a little late on this trend.
Whoa. Making your own pot at home? How quickly do you make
your
own pot?
Do you know of the Instant Pot?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's for cooking. I joke about the marijuana, but it's for the cooking of food in there.
It's for the cooking of food. Exactly. I did not, from the moment my wife very excitedly ordered a gargantuan Instant Pot, I think it's like 8 quarts, to the moment it arrived, to where she was setting it up and learning how to use it, in the back of my mind, and I didn't say this, I was very supportive and like, oh, this is really cool. You know, I'm glad you got a cool thing. I was thinking, how is this better than my crock pot? Mm. Like, okay, so it can also be a pressure cooker. But if I have a pressure cooker and a crock pot, is it really that advantageous to have them both in one? Didn't know what I was talking about. I am now on the Instant Pot train because I made spaghetti bolognese in it. Now, granted, you have to boil the pasta separately.
Yeah.
But everything else making the bolognese was done in the pot. So the sauteing and everything wasn't done in a pan and then transferring to the crock pot like I used to do, like a chump. Oh, no. Mm. You saute it right there in the Instant Pot, and then you add your tomato sauce. And then instead of an hour on the burner, like I used to do it, it's 15 minutes with the pressure cooker. Insane. Yeah. Like, I get it now. I get it. It's the cumulative advantage of lots of little things. You know, it's that trend where we're like, how hard is it to just go plug in your Christmas tree, Scott? Mm-hmm. And then you realize, well, it's not that hard, but boy, is it a lot easier to not have to do that when I've got a smart socket here. Same thing. It's like, how hard is it to saute the onions and then put them in sauce on a pot? Well, it's not that hard, but it's a lot easier to not have to do it. And it just accumulates, you know, a lot of those little things accumulate to make something really easy to use.
Yeah. Now we're yet to get on that revolution, but I everyone I know who uses Instapots regularly loves them. That's how we ended up getting a sous vide finally and messing around with that. Now we don't want meat any other way. Like, I'm all in. Does this have any features like, you can Wi-Fi stuff to your Instapot while you're sitting on your butt?
It's got an app, and you can choose to use one of the recipes in the app, and then it'll automatically program all the stuff that, you know, change it from pressure cook to crock pot to back and forth and things. It gives you recipes too, so you can add it to a grocery list and all that sort of stuff. It's got some of those whistles and bells too.
Nice. Well, if you want to make your food while you're in the other room and check on it from remotely, it looks like it's got that option.
It just comes out crystal with a little tint of blue.
A little bit of blue. Yeah. That's the good stuff. We're talking about turkey, guys.
I'm talking about my bolognese, of course.
Oh, bolognese. A little blue in your bolognese.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. You should have cooked that beef longer, Tom.
Yeah, just a little tiny bit. All right. Well, that's all well and good. Hey, check this out. Got a quick email. Came to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. This came to us from Sarah, who says this. It's a wonderful life episode. That's her subject. And her message is this. You were talking about films that were considered to be failures initially and then gained popularity and became game-changing movies. And I screamed at my iPad, The Princess Bride! The Princess Bride! If you listen to the excellent As You Wish, Inconceivable Tales from the Making of The Princess Bride, read by Cary Elwes himself, you'll hear just how much of a failure it was at the box office. I went to it opening weekend, so I never felt that way, but I wasn't paying attention to the actual box office numbers, so it shows what I know. But anyway, it says it wasn't until the fortunate timing of VCR that it gained its popularity via word of mouth. It is now considered to be one of the classic movies of all time and highly influential for many filmmakers. Dang it, Scott, The Princess Bride. Jeez, I was waiting for Tom to say something too. But she really went after us at the end there.
Okay, Sarah, I love that you have contributed extra information as we asked.
Yeah.
Hey, does anyone have any other good examples? Send them to us. There is no need to shout.
No, you don't need to shout in all caps. I should have mentioned that. Lots of all caps just, here.
We don't know everything.
No.
That's why we like hearing from you.
Yeah.
So instead of being angry and shouting, just shout joyfully to yourself, like, I know an example. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
I guess then you'd end up screaming as well.
You would. I have another example of this, and this is, I just referenced it earlier, but The Big Lebowski, which I watched again, I watch every year around Christmas for, I don't know why, is one of those movies. It was one of the Coen's worst performing at theaters movies ever. And it took on a whole new life in home video, in that case DVD, because it was late enough for that, but became a monster hit after the fact and is now considered not only one of their best movies, but one of the more influential movies of the 90s and is one of the most quotable movies of the 90s. Like, it's one of those. So every generation has them, every decade has them. And I'm glad she brought up Princess Bride because I actually didn't know.
Yeah, no, great call, Sarah. Yeah. Princess Bride, absolutely, if not more so, an example of this than It's a Wonderful Life. I didn't check this, but Jester Wood says opening weekend was $206,000. It made $16 million.
Oh, geez.
$16 million is all it made.
Yeah, it's not a lot. Not for even then, like even if you just for inflation. But it's one of those movies I would call it. So Firebrand in the chat said it as well. I would call Princess Bride a perfect film. It's one of those movies that just feels like there's no loose ends, no broken narratives.
You keep using that word.
I know. I don't think you know what that means. But it is. It's one of those for me. I have a small list of perfect films. It's like that. Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, is a perfect film.
Mm.
I think.
Princess Bride is so rewatchable.
It's so rewatchable all the time. Yeah. I think Mad Max Fury Road's a perfect film. Don't at me. I think I can't think of any others off the top of my head.
The Room is one of your favorites.
I think the first Back to the Future is a perfect film. I don't think the other two are. I think they're fun, but I don't think they're the same. I think The Matrix 1 is a perfect film. Like, there's a lot of movies where I just think they adhere to a structure that makes them really last and feel good all the time. And those are it.
See, and this exact moment right here is why I'm really glad we're doing Film Fest, because someone could come to Scott Johnson and say, well, have you ever seen Citizen Kane? And now Scott can go, yeah, I have.
Yeah,
and
I have.
The Godfather,
yeah.
And The Apartment. And well, I haven't seen The Apartment yet, but it's on the list,
right.
You know, and Casablanca. Like, we're building that repertoire for you to be like, no, yeah, I've seen those. Of course I have.
Yeah, totally. I think the first Incredibles is a perfect film. I think that, Goodfellas is a perfect film. These are all very different genres for different audiences, but you can find them out there, folks. It's a fun list to make in your own head. And obviously we're not all going to agree, but yeah, there you have it. Thanks very much, Sarah. You really got us talking about all things The Princess Bride in all caps. And that is going to do it for us this week. Now, a reminder, Legal Geek swings in yet again this week and provides a 2018 Legal Geek wrap-up and a great tabletop gaming holiday gift guide for those last minute shoppers. So look at the lawyer.
Look at that.
Yeah.
A little bonus material there from Legal Geek. That's awesome.
Who knew the lawyers could have fun too?
Oh, they can.
Shocking.
You don't think a lawyer knows a good strategy tabletop gaming?
It's a good choice. Point. Come on. Their whole life is a strategy tabletop game.
Hey, our next episode, first of the year, yeah, will be our next Current Geek Film Fest episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What are we hitting in the first?
It's a little indie film from 1977 called Star Wars.
Oh, right. Science fiction genre, right? The kind of a little genre film. I remember that. I remember hair buns and a giant dog. There's all kinds of stuff in there.
Yes. The kids love their Star Wars.
I've heard people say that before. Like, old people in my life have said that. Like, oh, do you get some Star Wars figures? Like, yeah, I guess I did, Grandma. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Star Wars in this context is going to be way fun. So come check that out next month. It'll be our next episode, won't it?
Yeah, I guess if these events remain unaltered by the future, the child will live on Tuesday, January 8th.
Nice. Are you where? Wait, when's CES? When's that happening?
Oh, I'll be at CES Tuesday, January 8th. So maybe we'll do it later in the week before. Scott and I will have to talk.
We'll figure it out. Tom and I will find a way. Life finds a way is what I mean. All right. So check that out. That's coming up next or soon. And that's going to do it. Tom, anything you'd like to mention before we go?
Yeah, I'm real excited to be back podcasting with Molly Wood. If you were a fan of Buzz Out, incarnation of It's a Thing, Molly and I are back podcasting with a new It's a Thing. It comes out weekly, supported on Patreon, patreon.com/It's a Thing, to get all the details.
Nice. It's usually Thursdays, but today you're recording, right?
No, it's usually going to be weekly.
Oh, it's just weekly is weekly. Sure. Whatever.
I think we were supposed to do it Fridays, but we did Thursday last week. Who knows?
That's all right. Look, the point is it's you and Molly, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, we'll just do it as it comes.
Yeah. Get your fix on Route 66 right now for Tom and Molly's It's a Thing podcast. All right. Real quick. Three things. Want to wish all of our listeners a very Merry Christmas. We hope you have a fantastic holiday season. Stay safe. Don't drink too much. On New Year's Eve and all that. We're not going to be here for the next two holidays because Tuesdays land right on the holidays themselves, and there's a lot of other stuff going on. Very excited to get back to you, though. In the meantime, I do have one quick thing to pimp. I can see out of the corner of my eye, Tom's hand is moving when mine's moving, and it's freaking me out.
Oh, I was trying to count down. You said you had three things.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I did say I had three things. Okay, that was number one was Merry Christmas. Number two, I just flipped everyone off with the middle finger. The number two thing is myself and Doghouse have gotten together, doghousesystems.com, they make gaming computers, have gotten together for a joint project where I stream games on a regular basis, Tuesdays and Thursdays for a couple hours those days.
Nice.
And I am currently playing Resident Evil 7 for the second time, but for the first real time, because last time I got too scared and quit. Someone has since purchased the game and said, if I buy this for you on PC, will you play it again? I said, sure. I didn't think they'd really do it. They did it. So now I'm following through on my promise and commitment, and I'm playing that thing through the entirety of it, and I'm screaming like an idiot and a girl, and I don't like video games that scare me. I'm terrified of horror games. So if you want to watch me, and I don't mean screaming like a girl in a bad, negative way. I just mean not my normal manly voice is what you'll hear. That's what I mean. So anyway, if you want to watch that, the archives are up. It's all up on the YouTube channel. Just go to frogpants.com and you can track it all down. Third thing. There is no third thing. All right, we're out of here. special thanks to everybody for watching us. We appreciate this year of Current Geek, and hope you guys have enjoyed it as well. Big thanks to Tom, of course. Thanks for hanging out with me for this year, man.
No, thank you, man. My pleasure.
It's only two away from 200 of this iteration.
So look at that.
That's crazy. Nothing special probably, but 200 is a big deal, so we're getting there. I think that's everything else. What else? That's it. Currentgeek.com.
That's it. Yep. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
I hope you had a good Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa, Festivus, Happy New Year.
Happy New
or
Year.
Or just solstice.
Ah, yes, and enjoy your whatever pagan ritual you enjoy. That as well. We hope you have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.
Happy holidays and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we close out 2018 with answers to where you can find the Legal Geek content, including on other podcasts this year, and then discuss another holiday gift guide in a field we cover frequently. Throughout the year, I've received several questions on whether there's a separate podcast for Legal Geek or another source for prior segments, especially now that this segment has reached a fifth anniversary from its start in December 2013. While there is no separate podcast as of yet, you can always find the more than 150 prior installments of this segment over at archive.org under the user BuckeyeFitzy. I also keep a running list of my scripts at legalgeekfitz.blogspot.com, but fair warning, these are typically unedited versions of the audio you find on Archive. I also make appearances at trade shows in the tabletop and video game industry, providing educational seminars to game designers and publishers regarding my chosen field of practice, intellectual property law. I provided seminars at Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio, and at Gen Con in Indianapolis in 2018, and I plan to attend both of these again in 2019. There are over 300 gaming conventions in the U.S. annually, so if you know one that needs such a speaker, let me know, and I'm happy to explore new ones as we move forward. Finally, a 2018 Legal Geek recap would be incomplete without mentioning a couple of fine podcasts that brought me on to guest for full shows. As usual, I appeared on the Geek All-Stars with Dan the Board Game Man this year, specifically in episode 166, entitled SDJ, Charterstone, and the Law Star Rides Again. I also appeared on Ritual Misery podcast near the beginning of the year, in their episode 150. If you want a little longer form version of Legal Geek, check those shows out. Before wrapping 2018, I also wanted to provide a second gift-giving guide I enjoyed for this holiday season, following up on the privacy law-themed one from 2 weeks ago. This one is just a great overall guide to the best tabletop board games, an article entitled Ars Technica's Ultimate Board Game Buyer's Guide. If you're looking for a last-minute gift, and you can get yourself to a local game store or Amazon Prime, these lists will provide great ideas for gamers of all experience levels. 2018 was a notable year on multiple fronts, including a contentious Supreme Court replacement and multiple landmark cases at that court, including one opening the door for sports betting in all 50 states, and another striking a blow at partisan gerrymandering of congressional districts. We also had plenty of fun legal stories to cover, including the romance novelist who trademarked cocky, and the surprising legal problems raised by the electric scooter invasion into many major cities. The bottom line is, the legal and nerd worlds keep generating interesting content and lessons to learn, and I will continue to provide insights into these fields in 2019. Thank you, as always, for listening to this segment and supporting it with your suggestions, and also to Scott and Tom for making it a part of Current Geek for the last 5 years. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter, at BuckeyeFitzy.